Automobiles are always changing, and it wouldn't be fitting, and we've gone way too long without speaking to our next conversationalist, our next caller, our interviewee, Paul Eisenstein of the Detroit Bureau. Paul has been away from us for far too long, and it's time to bring him back, and we're doing that right now as we kick off this hour of the Car Doctor. Mr. Eisenstein, how are you today, sir?
Good. Good to be with you.
Yes.
It has been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. We've just, you know, the time just flies by, and we lose track of it, and we go, holy cow, it's the end of the model year. And, you know, we think, we're car guys, so we think in terms of the model year. For us, the year's over. The 17s are going away, and the 18s are coming out. And we said, well, you know, we want to find out what's current, what's going away that we may not like, what some comments about what's coming up, and we thought we'd come to the definitive source, that being you and the Detroit Bureau. So what else is going on? What's new?
Oh, well, let's see. You know, I've got to tell you something funny. You know, you're talking about all the years you've been around. I've been covering the business since 1979, believe it or not. And I just stopped for lunch. I'm out at my cottage, which is out near Pinckney, if anybody knows where that is, north of Ann Arbor, Michigan, a little lakefront place. And just stopped in a local restaurant for lunch. And I was looking at a couple kids who finished up, got in their car, drove away. And I realized, my gosh, they were born in the new millennium.
Right.
And even weirder, we talk about Gen X, then we've talked about millennials. But it means that the next generation, what is that, Gen Z, is already driving. You know, it's quite fascinating how quickly the generations go, and also trying to figure out what each of those generations is going to want from cars and what they're going to experience.
Well,
in the not-too-distant future.
I can tell you the impact that I think they are having on cars, the Ys and the Xs and the Zs to come, is you can see it in the taste, you know, for older cars. Kids look at certain year cars, you know, 39 Packards, it's an old car. You know, we see it for what it is in that piece of history, but the kids today don't see that. They're, you know, gee, I want a tuner Honda or a tuner Subaru, and it's going to turn the economics of car collecting, I think, upside down as the generations, you know, fade away and the new generations come in. That will be interesting to watch if I'm here.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting thing. There's starting to be evidence that earlier reports of the gloom and doom of the auto industry may fade away. Maybe. We're starting to see that as they get older, millennials, Gen Y, are actually buying cars. Now, of course, they're switching. They're not going for sedans and coupes like we did. They're going over to SUVs and smaller ones at that, or crossover utility vehicles. And that's the big change. Here's the real question. As the millennials get older and as this whole new generation, Gen Z and the next one, will they buy cars? And will there be cars to buy? There's a growing sense that what we're going to be seeing going out to 2030 and beyond will be electrified, autonomous, or even more self-driving, as in driverless cars, that'll be operated by ride-sharing services. And we wrote a story on thedetroitbureau.com a couple of weeks ago about one study. I think it's a way big exaggeration, but it shows you where people are thinking. It suggested that by 2030, something north of 90% of the miles that Americans clock on roads here in the United States will be in electrified vehicles that have no driver at all, not just somebody sitting behind the wheel waiting to take control, completely driverless, and which are operated by ride-sharing services like Maven or Lyft or Uber or some of the others.
It's staggering. You saw the article a couple of weeks back, Carl Icahn bought up, you know, he's got the parts side, and now he's trying to buy repair facilities so he can control the, and I should, it's really what he's doing. He's going to end up controlling the marketplace because he's banking on people not owning cars either, and that it's going to be all fleets, and it's going to be regulated repairs and consistent repairs. And, you know, and now this conversation, 90% on Uber and self-driving vehicles. I don't know that you'll be able to afford to drive a car because you'll be the oddball trying to support something that's going to get to be very, very expensive again.
Well, that's true. And by the way, there's another study that was done by an outfit called the Boston Consulting Group. They are moderates. They only predict that 30% of the miles will be in those driverless, electrified, ride-sharing vehicles, which is still pretty significant. We definitely are seeing a lot of changes. Now, one of the interesting things, you just mentioned repairs, and one of the things we're also seeing is an incredible improvement in quality. And we're going to see that not just in initial quality out the door, but in the long-term reliability. An electric vehicles, when you have a single electric drive, except for perhaps the batteries going bad, and they're getting better, the amount of repairs you need, the amount of service you need is going to shrink sharply. You know, they're starting to see batteries that are doing pretty darn well after 100, even 150,000 miles. And as they get better, these vehicles, their batteries are going to last a full lifetime, and in some cases have life after the vehicle goes to the graveyard. They're now looking for ways to use batteries after the car itself is scrapped.
Well, and I could see that. I could see, because what I've noticed of cars in just repairing them at my level, in the last 3 years, the 17s, 16s, 15s, even the 14s, the more I look at them, they look like there's as much thought into how they're made as to how to take them apart and scrap them safely and environmentally safe.
You just hit on something very, very interesting. I don't know if you happened to see this week, we had the release of the annual J.D. Power Initial Quality Survey, or IQS. And they talked to 80,000 owners of products from about 35 or so brands. And there were some big surprises. For the second year in a row, believe it or not, Kia, the brand that we used to euphemistically describe as cheap and cheerful, which usually meant pretty junky, that was the number one brand for 2 years running.
Wow.
Yeah. The Koreans, all three, if you include the new Genesis brand, all three of the Korean brands were in the top 10.
I believe
you
that.
You want to guess where Toyota and Lexus, two brands that were number one between them, half of the years, the 31 years that the IQS has been done.
Were they even in the
Toyota
top 10?
Toyota and Lexus were together amounted for half of the years being number one. You want to know where they were this year?
Bottom 10?
No, not bottom 10. Toyota was just immediately above industry average, and Lexus was the first brand below industry average.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, even more interesting, the top 10 was loaded with primarily mainstream brands, Ford and Volkswagen and Kia and Hyundai. And mainstream brands are getting better and better. But you said something a minute ago about manufacturers designing vehicles to make sure, you know, that they go together right. And when I talked with Dave Sargent, who is the head of automotive at J.D. Power, that's a key point. You nailed it. Manufacturers these days are really spending a lot of time thinking about how do we make the customer happy? How do we build this vehicle so it comes out of the factory right? And not all the problems that are reported are mechanical. In fact, the number of busted engines and transmissions and wind noise problems and the like, mechanical problems, are very small. It's mostly these days, it's things like weird problems, glitches with your infotainment system or what have you.
Oh yeah, or something.
Those are design issues.
Something on the data bus. Hey Paul, sit tight. Let me pull over and take this pause. Hey, welcome back. Ron and Danny in the Car Doctor, rolling along this hour at 855-560-9900. We're talking with Paul Eisenstein, the DetroitBureau.com, so hold your calls right now. Mr. Eisenstein, you're still there, sir.
I still am.
I would expect you to be. No other place. So, by the way, how's the pussycat?
He is cuddling up to me right now. He keeps learning new tricks.
So. Now is he?
Or maybe I'm learning new tricks. He finds ways to get more treats out of me. That's what it comes down to.
Well, and you know, cats are really. I've decided cats really think they own humans. It's not the way.
What
we
do you
think.
Mean, think?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's the truth. It really is. They know what's going on. They're not crazy. So pick up where you left off. We were having a conversation there when we went off to the break.
Yeah, we were talking about quality and how things have changed. So the number one problem that owners of vehicles run into these days, according to J.D. Power, in the initial quality study. And that's just the first 90 days of ownership. It's not a year or two or three out. The biggest problem is all that infotainment technology, audio, communications, infotainment, navigation, that sort of stuff. But here's the interesting thing. Manufacturers are generally starting to fix that. You know what's becoming a major problem? And this is very worrisome because it gets back to the first thing we talked about today. So you want to guess what are some of the biggest problems that are rising fast in your vehicle?
I've got to think it's obviously in the electronics, and I've got to think it's in some of the simpler stuff. I see an awful lot of problems with security systems, you know, anti-theft and things like that. But then also I'm seeing more and more with, you know, rear seat DVD players and.
Well, that's the ACEN or infotainment technology that's been the big problem.
Right.
Where it is growing fastest, and this is worrisome, is in all that semi-autonomous technology that we're starting to see in cars. Blind spot intervention, lane departure warning, lane keep assist, forward collision warning with auto braking, cross traffic alert, and the like. And these are the pieces of the puzzle that will all need to come together for the autonomous and driverless vehicles that we talked about at the beginning, those cars that, you know, in many cases will be operated by ride-sharing services like Uber or Waymo, you know, the spinoff from Google and all those other companies. And if they don't start fixing these problems, I've got to tell you, they won't be able to make this stuff go on the road. They won't be able to pull it off. Or if they do, they're going to have more trouble. When it works, it's great, and it's pretty amazing. I had the chance to drive in two autonomous vehicles in Japan when I was over there just a few weeks ago with Honda at their proving grounds. I was on their high-speed oval, and on that 2.5-mile oval circuit, not only did we get to go pretty fast, but they also set up a couple of situations that would resemble what you'd run into on a freeway, including heavy traffic, cars stopping, things like that. And the car did very, very well. The other vehicle, which was even more advanced, simulated what you would experience, actually did experience what you would find on real roads, because we drove around the proving grounds hands-free. And this vehicle took the next step. It could see where lines should be on roads that had no, say, center line or line marking the edge of the road and the ground around it. So the technology is coming. It's a question of whether it'll work right.
And yeah, and I was just thinking to myself, as you were saying that, then those cars can be sold in West Virginia, because I remember we talked in a previous conversation, West Virginia was a problem because there's no white lines on the majority of roads in that state for whatever reason. And, you know, they've solved that problem, or they're about to solve that problem.
They're trying.
Yeah, they're trying. But it ultimately comes back to, you know, and they say electric cars. Before we go into the break, Paul, set us up for the break. Your thoughts on, they say with electric vehicles, self-driving vehicles, there'll be no more traffic jams.
Well, there should be fewer. When you look at what happens on the road, a lot of the jam-ups that we see are people that at the last minute decide they have to go from the fast lane and get off at that exit immediately. And, of course, that causes a rebound effect where you get miles of traffic backed up because somebody did something stupid. People don't merge very well. And you really have to put distance between two cars. You'll be able to have a concept called platooning, where all these cars with autonomous technology and vehicle-to-vehicle communications will be able to talk to one another. So when the car at the front of a line, which may be a mile down the road, has to brake for some reason, every car following it will know. And that will allow vehicles, in some cases, to platoon or follow one another mere inches off of each other's bumpers.
Wow.
I've been in cars that have been able to do this. So we know the technology is possible. Right. If it happens, you'll be able to put a lot more cars on already crowded roads, and they'll be able to merge and exit and do all sorts of things much more logically than people do. And that will take a lot of the troubles that we experience, the unexpected slowdown where you're doing 80, suddenly you're in stop-and-go traffic, and a half mile later, you're doing 80 again.
Wow. Well, hey, listen, Paul, as always, a great conversation. Stay right where you are. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're talking with Paul Eisenstein of DetroitBureau.com. When we come back, we're going to get some in-depth looks at Paul Eisenstein's recent road tests in the self-driving vehicles and beyond. So I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Don't go away. We're back right after this. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, rolling along. We're talking with Paul Eisenstein of the Detroit Bureau, thedetroitbureau.com. Paul, you know, electric cars you've ridden in. I want to get this in this segment.
A lot of them.
Yeah. Lately. Well, not electric. I keep thinking electric. You know, see, it shows you where my mind is, right? Autonomous, self-driving cars. Well, what are you saying?
Okay. Now, let's touch on both of them. I actually have an electrified car outside. It's the new Kia Optima plug-in hybrid electric vehicle, and I have driven in a number of autonomous prototypes. There are none on the road yet. There's right. nothing that is actually licensed to be sold to the public. There aren't any on the road that are retail, but there are hundreds and soon to be thousands on the road being tested on public roads. And I'd be curious, you know, as you go through the show later, you might want to ask the folks who are listening. I'd be very curious to know, do they like the idea of having these autonomous vehicles tested publicly? How do they feel?
I can answer that question now, because we've gotten feedback as we've talked about it over the years. I would say 80% of the people listening that we talk to don't like the idea, do not like the idea. They publicly reject it. Very few people, and it doesn't seem to be an age thing. To me, it's a human thing. It's a control issue. It's I want my hands on the wheel. I want to be the one driving. But very few people, and we've found even less people to accept these, we're not going to really get into it, but, you know, self-flying airplanes. That's a whole nother conversation.
Well, I hate to tell you, most airplanes right now fly pretty much everything but the takeoff and landing.
Yeah.
It's almost all automatic.
Yeah.
Now, so I'm going to try to avoid politics totally.
Yep.
But I will tell you that if folks out there are concerned about the idea of having these autonomous and even fully driverless vehicles tested on the road, they may be surprised to know that the current administration and Congress, the Republican Congress, are working right now on new regulations, a whole list of bills that if they are signed into law, which may happen anytime in the coming weeks, they're basically going to take away the right of your state to regulate autonomous vehicles. In other words, if you live in New Jersey or Minnesota or Oklahoma, and your regulators have said, no, we're not comfortable with having these vehicles driving, well, very soon, if this bill that the GOP and the White House support, your government, your state government, will have no choice but to allow it to happen. They may have the ability to set certain, some minor things like the cost of insurance, but that would be it. In fact, and here's where there's even more people that are concerned, because the bill might even strip the ability of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to require some of these prototype vehicles that are going to be allowed under the bill to have to meet federal safety standards, or at least some federal safety standards.
So
basically, it's a push to just say to the industry, go ahead, start testing anywhere as frequently as you want and with whatever you want.
And the problem I have with a lot of this, I haven't heard anyone discuss the impact of self-driving cars on the economy of auto repair and how it's going to affect, you know, whether it's a dealer or an independent or a parts house, or, you know, all of a sudden you're going to have less repair facilities. You're going to have less places. You're going to have less need, obviously, but you're going to have an awful lot of people on the unemployment line as a result, and nobody's talking about that.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. With autonomous, or let's go the next step, with driverless cars, and you know there's a big push to go to driverless trucks as well. Delivery vehicles, you know, shuttles that go from one pickup center, you know, an Amazon facility to another, for example. The push is to go to fully driverless there. Otto, a subsidiary of Uber, is now working on full semi-trucks that would cross the country without a driver. Now, when you think about it, Ron, you're talking about how many million people in the United States earn their living driving anything from the local FedEx truck to the cab or the Uber, the manned Uber right now, to the cross-country heavy-duty semi-trucks.
Right.
So that's one area where we may see millions of jobs eliminated. Now, there is a flip to this all, because when we started talking, you may recall I mentioned that we may see a situation where anywhere from 30 to 90% or more of the miles that Americans clock on the road could be inside of vehicles they don't own, that are run by ride-sharing services like Uber, with no driver on board and using electrified powertrains. I've asked the auto industry about this. I've asked a lot of executives, and there's a lot of debate over what that will mean for car production. Some people think we'll see a huge decline in car production, more jobs lost. Other people say, well, wait a second, we're going to have these vehicles on the road 24/7 since, you know, most people now, when they buy a car, they leave them in the driveway or at work over 80% of the day. So these vehicles are going to be running constantly. And that could mean that they're going to be clocking amazing amounts of miles. They could clock more in a year than you or I put on a car in the in maybe 10 or 12 years. And what will that mean for repairs? What will that mean for trade-ins? Because will the car companies that are operating these services, will they be letting the cars last 200,000 miles? And even if they do, does that mean that once a year, every car operated by these ride-sharing services will have to be replaced?
And maybe
the bottom line is, this a big question mark about all this stuff.
And maybe it's more cost-effective at that point, because you think about it, in a self-driving vehicle, it's all electric. What's going to go bad? Tires, electric motors, you know, whatever creature, cabin comfort features you've got. But the car becomes very disposable very easily, or very recyclable. You know, it's going to mm-hmm. be modular replacement. And then, you know, we've already seen it here in North Jersey. There isn't an engine rebuilder, a machine shop in the county of Bergen. Gone.
Really?
Don't exist anymore. Just don't exist. There isn't a one. And, you know, I'm multiplying that out in my head as, you know, affluency spreads, but the product keeps getting better, and it's newer cars and it's less older cars. And Paul, if you ask me right now, Ron, I've got to get a valve job done on my old 72 Monte Carlo. You need to send the heads out. I've got no place to send them. And, you know, how many of those? And I know some of the people that worked at the machine shops. They're out of business now. They're older. They're retired. Play that out how many hundreds of times across the country, and think about the effect on the economy as more people are put out of work by all this. And it's really going to have to be a trade-off somewhere. I think we're going to have to self-driving cars. I don't know what we're going to do with all these people that are going to be standing around. But as you say, it's going to put millions of people out of work.
Well, we're facing this issue across the board. It's something that I think a lot of people don't really think about, Ron. You're talking about Amazon, which takes away a lot of jobs at the local retailer. And now they're buying Whole Foods. And, well, between them and some other folks that are looking to deliver food to your home, we may see fewer, we could see fewer grocery stores, and certainly fewer people employed in grocery stores. Factories are going more and more automated. The president has been demanding that the auto industry bring back jobs, particularly in the parts business. And the reality is that some of those factories that are looking, that may come back here. I know somebody who runs Lear. You're probably familiar with them, one of the biggest seating manufacturers in the world.
Sure.
And we're a plant that built, say, seat frames that was sent to Mexico a decade or so ago because of labor costs. That plant, before it moved down there, might have employed 1,000 people. If that facility comes back to the United States to make it cost effective, he's going to have to cut his employment to 80.
Wow.
So when you add it all up, It's just like the argument, hey, folks, you want those cheaper EverReady batteries? Fine, you go to Walmart or wherever, and they have the power to send those over to China for manufacturing. And as you know, we're about to see Ford send a key model, the Focus, to China to cut costs because of the competition and lower demand. Yeah. So every time you want to cut a cost, you want to cut your costs on groceries or clothing, you go to Amazon or any of the new grocery services online. Well, you have to ask yourself, I just saved a buck and a half on a week's groceries, but did you also cut the job of your next door neighbor?
Right. And how is that going to play out? And technology marches forward. Paul, we're about out of time. If the listeners want to get more information, give them the website once again, please, sir.
Oh, please. Yeah. They can head over to thedetroitbureau.com. And we didn't get to talk about it, but they're welcome to check out. We have a new review of the Civic Type R, that great new Honda. And I just got back. Are you ready for this? I just had a chance to drive the new Alfa Romeo Stelvio.
Oh,
so we have a live review.
You know what? Stay on the phone. Talk to Tom. Maybe we'll get you back in 2 or 3 weeks. We can kind of cover that. How's that sound?
I'd enjoy that. It'd be good to be with you again.
Very good, sir. We would appreciate that. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, and we are back right after this.